The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
This is a guy who was tremendously productive, was a Heisman Trophy finalist.
With the 20th pick, the Pittsburgh Steelers select Kenny Pickett, quarterback, Pittsburgh.
It's a great fit for Kenny Pickett.
Always give it all that you got, even if they think that you're going to fly against our line.
We felt he came ready-made, he had pro-level accuracy.
That's exactly where, you know, I thought I would be.
Kenny Pickett was the only quarterback selected in the first round of the 2022 NFL Draft, going 20th overall to Pittsburgh. It marked just the fourth time since 2000 that only one quarterback was selected in the first round of a draft, with Pickett joining the likes of E.J. Manuel, Michael Vick, and Chad Pennington. So welcome to NFL Live. And one of the biggest stories of last week's draft was only Pickett being chosen. They're a slide for the other quarterbacks, right? And we're going to get into that because we're going to actually look ahead to next year. It should be much different. Louis Riddick, Tim Hasselbeck, Todd McShay here with you for the hour. Diana Russini joins us as well. And guys, how quickly we move on. It's already time to talk about 2023. Why not? We got Todd's way too early 2023 mock draft. And Todd, the headline here is, you see them highlighted, five quarterbacks in the top 10. Take us through these names.
Yeah, we're throwing it back to 2021 when we had an embarrassment of riches at quarterback. I started at number 9. Let's take a look at the quarterback there. Tyler Van Dyke, I had going to the Seahawks. Listen, he's coming out of Miami. Last year, Derek King got injured early in the season. Van Dyke came on, and he really sparked this Canes offense. He's tall at 6'4", 225 pounds. He's mobile. His flashes are brilliant, but he's got to be a lot more consistent in his second year as a starter in order to be a first-round pick. Then at number 8, I had the New York Giants taking Will Levis from Kentucky. It's hard to watch him on tape at times because you know the talent's there. He's 6'3", 232 pounds. He's mobile as well. He has a strong arm. They just don't utilize it a whole lot. They didn't, at least this past year. A lot of throws within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. With Wandale Robinson gone, I anticipate they're going to open things up a little bit more, the Wildcats, next season. Then at number 6, I had the Carolina Panthers taking a quarterback after taking one in the 3rd round this year, and that was Anthony Richardson from Florida. Listen, these are all projections, but this is a real big projection. You talk about skill set, 6'4", 236, the ability to run. He's got a howitzer for an arm. But he threw 5 interceptions, almost as many as touchdown passes a year ago. He's got a big jump that he has to make after starting just 2 games last season. Now onto the top 2 guys. Bryce Young I had going number 2 overall to the Detroit Lions. Young was fantastic last season. You talk about beginning of the season to the end, his ability to manipulate a defense is outstanding inside the pocket. Yes, he has some mobility, but this guy will kill you with his mind inside the pocket throwing the football. And then the number 1 quarterback I had, and I debated between Bryce Young and CJ Stroud. I went with Stroud at number 1 to the Houston Texans. He's a little bit bigger at 6'3", 218. He's just pinpoint accuracy as a passer. I love the way he throws the football. And you look at the Utah game in the Rose Bowl when he was missing the top 2 receivers, Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave, who were both picked in the top 11 of the draft. He still was throwing dime after dime after dime in that game. So it's going to be interesting. It's definitely going to be Stroud versus Young. Which one will be the first quarterback off the board when it comes to next April's draft?
Yeah, it's fascinating to hear these names and think about how exciting it's going to be to watch these guys in college football. And Todd, you mentioned the size difference in Stroud and Young, that being a differentiator when you think about those two. But you got Stroud 1, you got Young 2, the top 2 quarterbacks. Is there anything else that makes them a little bit different for you in your mind when you try to evaluate them?
There's not a whole lot. They both like to beat you from inside the pocket. I do think Young is more developed in terms of understanding what defenses are doing and how he progresses from read 1 to 2 to 3 so quickly. I had to remind myself, Laura, several times watching his tape this past season, he's just a 1-year starter. Mm. Same thing for Stroud. But Bryce, it really is about the mind and the timing. Versus, I think Stroud just has a natural, God-given talent to put the ball on the target. Now, granted, he has 3 first-round receivers that he was throwing to this past season with Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave and then Jackson Smith and Jigba, who was the most productive of all three of them, is going to be a top 10 pick next year. So he has a lot of weapons to throw to, and he will again this season. But I love the way that Stroud spins the ball.
Yeah, you know, Bryce Young had to deal with his weapons going down in big moments, too, and still trying to create something out of nothing. You mentioned, you know, AR-15, Anthony Richardson is your third quarterback. Is there a huge separation between Stroud and Young at the top and then everybody else?
I think there is, because we kind of know, even though it was just one season, we know what Stroud can do. We know what Bryce Young can do. Big stages, big moments, big games. They always seem to deliver. With the other guys, again, I mentioned Richardson. I love his tools, but he started two games, Laura. And there's talks that he's still fighting to win the job next year. So, this could be a guy that doesn't even come into the draft and maybe only half the season as a starter. But when he gets it going, if he gets it going to the level that I know he can, we're talking about a talent that is unbelievable. And it's just fun to watch. He's just scratching the surface right now, and it's fun to watch that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Florida fans are going to be upset if you don't see Richardson start. But you're right, he is in a little bit of a quarterback battle with Napier taking over there. All right, with us already looking ahead to the 2023 NFL Draft, it's worth remembering that five teams currently hold multiple first-round picks next year. The Eagles, Dolphins, Seahawks, Texans, and Lions all have two of them. So let's bring in Diana Russini. And what's the sense, Diana, that you get of how Jalen Hurts' situation is viewed around the league with those Eagles having multiple picks?
Yeah, the Eagles ran the ball more than any other team in the NFL last year, mostly due to the fact that they've got a very athletic, running, mobile quarterback in Jalen Hurts. Sometimes there have been questions about his accuracy, his ball placement. Teams around the league view him as a quarterback that has that potential to be really good if he can make those improvements. As for the way Philadelphia sees it, right? They essentially gave him as many weapons as they possibly could, especially on draft night, as they were able to pull off that trade for A.J. Brown. So they're telling us that they believe in him, but the sense I'm getting is he's got to go out there this season and almost play as if this is a one-year prove-it deal, especially knowing there are so many quarterbacks coming up in the draft, as Todd just pointed out.
Yeah, absolutely. More from Diana coming later in the show. Hurts was asked about all of this yesterday. He's been questioned his entire career. Here's what he said about his current situation.
Every time we've spoken to Nick, to Howie, to Jeffrey Lurie, they've kind of doubled down on their commitment to you. How do you interpret that and kind of big picture, how do you view that?
I mean that's... That's what they say, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's understood, you know. It's my opportunity. It's my team. It's pretty much what it is, you know. It's my team, so I'm ready to go.
Yeah, Hurts hasn't ever shied away from opportunity and pressure, Tim. But the pressure that he has could certainly have a downside. There's also an upside to it as well. Just explain that a little bit more to us.
Well, I think that we've all seen that the moves Philadelphia has made have basically said, look, Jalen Hurts, you're going to have an opportunity to be the starter this year. But if it doesn't work out, if you don't play well, then we have the ammunition to draft a quarterback a year from now. But look at the other side of that coin. The other side of that coin, in terms of the opportunity, Laura, is, hey, we put all this talent around you for you to come into the season as the anointed starter, even though you weren't a first-round draft pick, play with great supporting cast. And oh, by the way, if you prove you can be the guy, that ammunition that people are talking about maybe being used on a quarterback a year from now, no, we'll go get you more help because you're still on your rookie deal and we're going to surround you with more talent. May come in the way of the offensive line, may come in the way of guys on the defensive side of the ball. But, you know, I think the upside here is not only the opportunity he gets in 2022, but in 2023, with two first-round draft picks to help him, if he can, in fact, prove that he deserves to be a starter.
Yeah, I think for Jalen Hurts in 2022, it's going to be all about how do you prove that in 2023 that Philadelphia doesn't need to go out and get a quarterback. I think it's really capitalizing on the big moments, the situational moments, the moments that we all associate great quarterback play with, and what are they? That's third down. That's red zone. That's 2 minutes before the half. That's 2 minutes at the end of the game. That's playing your best when the other team knows that you have to throw it when you're down 7, down 14, the last drive of the game, and they know you're going to throw it, and they're going to make you sit in the pocket and not be able to utilize and take advantage of play-action pass on first down, RPO on second down, and not going to let you get outside the pocket and scramble and make off-schedule plays and ad-lib, but sit in the pocket, read out the coverage, distribute the football with great decision-making and accuracy, and then go ahead and lead your team to wins. Lead them to wins. Not one of these situations where it's like, well, yeah, we won the game. He had a nice game. Other guys made plays. Miles Sanders made a play here. Dallas Goedert took a nice tight end screen for 40 yards. A.J. Brown took a slant that was really a five-yard throw and ran at 70 yards. But you be the reason. That's what 2022 has to be about to me for Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, Lou, I think it's a great point because – you know, when you talk about the moments, those are going to matter. And I think the other thing that matters, there are certain benchmarks you can say. All right, look, hey, account for over 35 touchdowns. You know, turn the ball over in terms of fumbles and interceptions, you know, less than 12 times. Do those things so that we can feel like, you know what, you are developing as a passer and as a player. But to your point, on top of that, when Philadelphia gets the ball back on their own 20, down 4 on the road against Dallas, what does he do? How does he deliver? Does he lead his team in that situation? And so, yeah, those are the things that they're going to look at the end of the year and say, is this the kind of guy that we are going to build around? Have we seen enough growth? Is he the leader that we're looking for? And ultimately, I think if he can prove that, look, the future ends up being bright, again, with some of the things we've talked about in terms of what they can surround him with.
Yeah, you know, Lewis, I think the other piece of this, though, is that the Eagles are going to be watching the college game. They're going to be watching these quarterbacks that we expect to have great seasons and think we might be able to get one of those. Just take us quickly inside the front office meetings and some of the conversations that may be happening as you're thinking Jalen Hurts may be doing well, but those guys might be even better.
Yeah, I mean, really, that's – that is going to be a conversation that's to be had. Like, what our next best alternative? Is it better than what we get? And we're going to assume, okay, let's just assume that Jalen's able to make those progressions and make that leap, particularly as a pocket passer, not as someone who's thrown outside the pocket, not as someone who's a dynamic run threat, but somebody who is a pocket passer. Yeah, you're going to have to determine, is it better for us to go ahead and keep him under contract and invest in around him and make this football team even better? Or do they feel as though that young quarterback that they're watching on Saturdays is the true force multiplier that they need? That will be fun to watch, you know, unfold all fall.
Yeah, it could be quite a conundrum that the Eagles could be in. Maybe a good problem to have, though. Still more to come on NFL Live as we're just getting started. As the offseason continues, we give our picks for which teams' offseasons we like and didn't like. Find out where teams like Cincinnati and Tennessee land. These guys have some great opinions. And later, after the Giants declined to pick up the fifth-year option of Daniel Jones, he suddenly finds himself in a prove-it year similar to Jalen Hurts. Hear why Tim thinks this might be too tall of a task. NFL Live is brought to you by Marvel Studios' Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, only in theaters Friday.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hey, did you see this? Tom Brady played golf with F1 driver Lewis Hamilton down in Miami this week. Look at those guys. A perfect caption from the Bucks QB. He said, some guy with 7 world titles and Tom Brady. Hamilton is a 7-time F1 champion. And along those lines, you can catch Hamilton on the course this Sunday at 3:30 Eastern over on ABC as Formula One takes over Miami with a brand new track featuring Hard Rock Stadium. This is going to be a whole lot of fun. And listen, with free agency and the draft now mostly behind us, we got to ask these guys the tough questions. But actually, this question is pretty simple. Lewis, you get to start first. Who has had which team the best offseason in the NFL? Start us off.
Yeah, Laura, I'm going to go with the Cincinnati Bengals. Do not think that 2021 was a one-off type of season where they caught lightning in a bottle. They went to work this offseason. They really fixed this offensive line, starting from center out to the right tackle, where they signed Ted Karras. They get Alex Kappa, signed Lyle Collins. And then in the draft, they draft Daxton Hill in the first round out of Michigan, who is kind of a hybrid corner slash safety, and they need more help in the secondary. They draft Tyson Anderson, you see on your screen there, in the fifth round out of Toledo. They draft Cam Taylor-Britt in the second round out of Nebraska. These guys are all playmakers, man. So they are going to protect Joe Burrow. The offense is going to be as explosive as it's been, or as explosive as it was in 2021. But on the defensive side in the secondary, they got some young studs that can all run, that are all interchangeable, can play different positions. Joe Burrow has gotten this team kind of right where he wants it in terms of the help that he needs. Since he's going to be knocking on the door of a repeat appearance in the Super Bowl, you can bet on that.
Yeah, I love it, Lou, because I think a lot of people were like, oh, maybe last year was their best chance. No. They absolutely have focused on this. And you mentioned the revamped O-line. That looks for Joe Burrow to take another step next season. Last year, he ranked 3rd in QBR when kept clean behind only Aaron Rodgers and Matthew Stafford. Tim, it's your turn. Which team had the best offseason in the NFL for you?
Well, I'll stay in the AFC, but go from the north to the west. And I'm going with the Raiders, and for a couple of reasons. Let's start with kind of where they were. Think about all of the off-the-field issues that they dealt with a year ago, how they came through it. I think they learned a lot about their football team. And then in the process, they land a coveted head coach in Josh McDaniels, who I think, you know, with his experience from the last time around of being a head coach, is going to do a much better job. And then think of the impact player. Start with Devontae Adams. That trade there for the best wide receiver in the game, in my opinion, is a difference maker on an offense that already had talent at running back, certainly had talent at tight end, and is exactly what you need to play outside of a guy like Hunter Renfrow. And then you think about Chandler Jones, his addition. He's a double-digit sack guy. I just feel like when you look at the Raiders and those three moves in particular, they're actually like difference makers that impact the outcome of games. And so I like what they've done, especially with where they were coming from.
Yeah, especially in today's NFL, Tim. And look for Devontae Adams to help out big time in the red zone, too. Over the last two seasons, Adams ranks 1st in red zone touchdown interception or receptions. Interception would be interesting. While the Raiders rank 27th in red zone efficiency over that same span. Thanks to Tim. Todd, it's your turn. What do you think? Which team had the best offseason in the NFL for you?
Yeah, Laura, I'm going to go with the New York Jets. And I know we're coming off of a Super Bowl where the winner said bleep draft picks, and I get it with the Rams. But when you're rebuilding a roster like Joe Douglas was, the general manager, and starting from scratch a few years ago, you've got to win with draft picks and reasonably priced free agents that fit your system. They killed the draft. Let's face it. They got the number one cornerback in Sauce Gardner, the number one wide receiver in Garrett Wilson. They got one of the best pass rushers. They traded back in the first round to get Jermaine Johnson. They also got the best running back in the class in Breece Hall. And then in free agency, they didn't overspend. They brought in Laken Tomlinson, who's going to be a good starter at guard. DJ Reed, very underrated cornerback position in coverage. And also CJ Uzama, to come in as a blocker and a reliable target. So you're really helping out not only the defensive side, but your young quarterback in Zach Wilson. I love what the Jets did this past offseason.
Yeah, you know, don't forget, too, Todd, to that point, they're also expected to get a healthy Carl Lawson back next season. Remember the last time we saw him in 2020? He ranked top 20 in both total pressures and pass rush win rate. All right, so most of the offseason maneuvering is complete, but there's still some stories that we'll be watching closely in the coming weeks. Diana, give us some guys that could still end up in another uniform by the time the season starts.
I feel like you could ask me this question every single day, and you probably have over the last few weeks, because there really hasn't been a lot of movement. I think a lot of people, a lot of teams want to know what's going on here. So let's start with Baker Mayfield, who we know is on the Cleveland Browns roster. He's owed roughly $19 million of guaranteed money. The Carolina Panthers had shown a little interest. We thought perhaps that during the draft he would get traded. Of course, they took a quarterback, so that's dead in the water. So as of right now, there are no teams showing significant interest in Baker Mayfield, so we will see how this will develop over the next few weeks. The same thing that same situation really for Jimmy Garoppolo, okay? So it's a better situation there in terms of the relationship because Jimmy has never asked for a trade the way we've seen Baker Mayfield. But essentially, the 49ers have between now and week one to make a decision what they're going to do with Jimmy G. Because remember, starting week one, he's owed that $24 million guaranteed money. So we'll see what happens during training camp if perhaps more teams are interested. And, you know, training camp always seems to be the hot time where these receivers, or at least free agents that are on the market, find jobs. So perhaps guys like Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry, Julio Jones, these three veteran receivers still don't have any teams. You know, Odell Beckham Jr. is still dealing, or at least recovering from that ACL tear that we all saw him suffer at the Super Bowl. So stay tuned on that. We'll see what teams are interested, knowing that the Rams are still keeping their eye on. And of course, Deebo Samuel, perhaps the biggest story of the offseason. We know he requested a trade, but how about this? Last night, he followed the San Francisco 49ers on Instagram, which normally that sounds so stupid, but he has shared so much of his frustrations with the team through social media. So to me, that seems like a good start at least. Now, really the thing that we have to pay attention to, Laura, is will he show up come mid-June to the mini camps? Because what will happen is if he doesn't show, he will be fined. And that fine is relatively expensive. We're talking about $40,000 to $50,000 a day. So between now and then, we'll see if perhaps they're able to patch it up and move forward and maybe even get that contract he wants.
Yeah, again, Diana, as you know, the 49ers have said we will do everything we possibly can to keep Deebo and to keep him happy. Maybe, according to social media, they're on their way there. All right, we got a lot more coming your way here on NFL Live. Coming up next, we discuss where the Commanders stand with Carson Wentz and what their plans may be beyond this season. Hear why Lewis Riddick thinks Wentz's job may not be safe this season. That's next, right here on NFL Live. That's what I wanna do. Don't forget to check this out. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, our new Monday Night Football broadcast team, will join the Good Morning America crew to reveal this season's biggest ABC-ESPN Monday Night Football matchup. That's Monday, May 9th between 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. Eastern on Good Morning America. The full schedule release will be Thursday, May 12th at 8 Eastern on ESPN2, ESPN Plus, and NFL Network. All right, listen close here for a second as Colts wide receiver coach Reggie Wayne heaps praise on the new quarterback in Indy.
Man, it makes me almost want to throw up because he reminds me of Peyton so much.
Okay, guys, let me just say for the record, that's twice this week that the Peyton Manning comparison has been made in Indy. Owner Jim Irsay did it earlier this week, similar comments on Monday. Lewis, you like bringing Matt Ryan in with that kind of praise? I mean, we're talking Peyton Manning here.
Yeah, I mean, Laura, I mean, that's pretty good, man. And look, obviously, Matt has always been known as somebody who's very cerebral and all, but that's some... I mean, can you get any loftier expectations? And we're talking about a guy who's been playing for a long time and still he's being compared to one of the greatest of all time. I think that tells you, though, that tells you what the expectations are going to be in Indianapolis this year. It's going to be that they win the South and they challenge for a Super Bowl berth in the AFC. I don't think there's any way around that. Yeah. And I think Chris Ballard, the general manager, has done a fantastic job really meeting all of their needs this offseason.
I think someone's dog barked in agreement there. All right, so now we know it for sure. Matt Ryan is basically Peyton Manning. So some of the overtop praise, though, might be because of the direct comparison to last year's quarterback, Carson Wentz, for them. He's now in Washington, and Wentz had decent numbers at times last season in Indy. But as we know, it wasn't happening when he needed it and when it mattered most. He had to be better in those big moments. So, Lewis, do you buy that yet another fresh start for Wentz will be what turns his career around?
No, Laura, I don't think this is about a fresh start. I don't think this is about a new environment. I don't think it's about a different voice in his ear, because he had the ultimate voice in his ear last year in Frank Reich in Indianapolis. And you saw just how just broken that organization looked in terms of how it didn't turn out the way they wanted it to and how they expected it to. So if it doesn't work out there, where that was supposed to be the fresh start, I just don't see where that can be the reason why Carson goes ahead and takes his game back to 2017 levels, which I think we need to stop talking about anyway, when he was on his way to maybe winning the MVP in Philadelphia. This is going to be about Carson doing exactly what you alluded to in the opening of this segment, which is in the biggest of moments, stop making those plays and those decisions that just have leave you scratching your head. Otherwise, I can tell you this, that fifth rounder they drafted out of North Carolina in Sam Howell, who 2 years ago many people thought, wow, he could be a first-round pick. He could be the top quarterback taken. You may see him playing much sooner rather than later because what do they have to lose? They can get rid of Carson at the end of 2022, in the beginning of at the 2023 new league year with no penalty at all as far as dead money on the salary cap. So they have nothing that says they have to really commit to him past this year or even past a bad game this year.
And Lou, that's why I think that his year has got to be a remarkable year if he wants to be the quarterback going forward. Everything you just outlined is exactly why it can't just be a little bit of improvement. And the thing I would just say is it is so hard to get better when everything around you is changing. You know, it's much different when you're, you know, in the same offense and you're mastering an offense rather than learning an offense, or you know receiver's body language like the back of your hand because you've put so much time in working with them versus getting to know somebody for the first time. And so I think, you know, that's the challenge. Have we seen guys do better in a new situation with some new scenery? Sure, we have, but it is unlikely. And that's why I think that for Carson Wentz, it's got to be a drastically different season in 2022. Otherwise, you know, the Commanders are just going to be looking another direction a year from now.
Yeah, Tim, it's a really important point. Todd, we've been talking about your way too early 2023 mock draft today as it's debuted. Did you consider giving the Commanders a quarterback when you were looking through what they might take?
I absolutely did it, Laura. And they were picking at 10. I had five quarterbacks come off the board in the top nine. And don't yell at me. Save your thumb and energy on Twitter. It was the Caesar Sportsbook, the inverse order, the reason why the pick numbers were the way that they were in terms of the Super Bowl and how they stacked up with the odds. Back to the point. Carson Wentz, to me, you don't know what you're getting. I mean, he's got to prove, first of all, he can be a leader and not bring negative energy to a locker room, to an organization. He's got to prove he can continue to stay healthy, and he's got to prove he can play big in big games. I think this is a one-year Band-Aid with hope that things turn around and he fits in well here. But ultimately, it wouldn't shock me at all, especially if they're picking in the top 10, if the Commanders wind up drafting a quarterback in 2023.
Yeah, Todd, you're talking about the angry Twitter thumb. Someone just tweeted you that they actually tweet you with their fingers and not their thumbs, okay? So just get it right. We talked a lot about quarterbacks here today. Give us three non-QBs you like in next year's draft.
Yeah, I'll start with Will Anderson, the defensive end. I think he's the best player in the draft coming out of Alabama. This guy's a sawed-off Tasmanian devil. He plays with great energy, power, quickness, speed, everything you look for. If he was in this past draft in 2022, he's the number one pick overall, ahead of Trayvon Walker. He led the nation, not the SEC, the nation, with 17 and a half sacks. Knows that he's the guy you got to stop. He still was able to get through double teams and chips consistently. Then Jaxon Smith-Njigba, the wide receiver from Ohio State. You talk to everyone in the program and even talk to his other wide receivers, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson. Who's the most talented guy? It's Jaxon. This guy is phenomenal. He played in the slot last year. He's going to move all around. Despite having two top 11 picks at wide receiver in this year's class, he led the team with 95 receptions and 1,606 receiving yards. And then finally, the number three player is Jalen Carter, defensive tackle from Georgia. There were 15 players drafted from Georgia. A record was set in the NFL draft this past draft. I still couldn't stop watching number 88. Jalen Carter is unbelievable. He was a number three defensive tackle. You had Jordan Davis going early. You also in the first round, Devontae Wyatt. He was the best player. Go back to 2017. No interior defensive lineman outside of Quinnen Williams has a better pass rush win rate for an interior defensive lineman than Jalen Carter. That's how special he is. If it wasn't a breakout season last year, everyone's going to know this guy's name. He's outside of Will Anderson, he's the best defensive player in college football.
Man, there's some game changers you just listed there. And I was watching you, Lewis. You're watching this film already. You're already studying for next year's draft, right? You're dialed in, I can tell.
Well, I'll tell you this. As Todd said, when you're watching the Georgia tape, You're going, oh, who's that guy? Who's that guy? Who's 88? Who's that guy? And you're going, oh, they're not draft eligible yet. And you're going, well, no wonder they won a national championship. Like, they got players all over the place. Tremendous job of recruiting by Kirby Smart. It's just fun to watch and see good players. It's always fun, Laura, to watch good players.
I love it. Yeah, the smile on Kirby Smart's face after all those guys were drafted is only going to keep getting bigger if they keep doing that. All right, coming up next, we discussed earlier in the show our offseason winners, but now it's time to reveal our teams that still need some work. Someone here will tell you why the Titans' moves leave a lot to be desired. Don't miss this next on NFL Live. We'll be right back. It's calming
down, the heart is- Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Haven't had a chance to check it out yet. All 10 episodes of Tom Brady's Man in the Arena are streaming now on ESPN+. You can watch them again, too, if you've already seen them. Brady takes you inside each of his Super Bowl runs, starting over 20 years ago in New England, all the way through his Super Bowl 55 win in Tampa. And, yeah, he's still going. Okay, offseason moves are mostly behind us. But, Todd, which team didn't do enough for you?
I think the Patriots are one. You're just watching them against Buffalo in the playoff game, the struggles they had with speed on their defensive back seven. And then in free agency, they go out and bring in a bunch of guys who either have age problems or have had some durability issues. Then in the draft, Cole Strange, I really like him coming out of Chattanooga. He's going to be a longtime starter at guard. They reached for him at 29. They did the same thing with Tyquan Thornton, the wide receiver for Baylor. Good player. Could have got him in the third round. So very interesting to see the Patriots. Far be it for me to tell Bill Belichick what to do, but I thought they had a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Dallas Cowboys here. And I think, look, starting in free agency, I think it was a big blow to them to lose Randy Gregory to the Denver Broncos. He was a tremendous bookend for DeMarcus Lawrence. And I think in the draft, look, they tried to address offensive line and they tried to address defensive line as well. Look, I think Tyler Smith drafted in the first round out of Tulsa. He's going to need a lot of work. And Sam Williams, who is a tremendous athlete out of Ole Miss as a pass rusher, he is not Randy Gregory. We'll see how those two pan out.
Yeah, first, Todd, good luck going out in public in Boston. For me, it's the Tennessee Titans. Here's the deal. I don't think they wanted to move A.J. Brown. I think what they saw was the receiver market was getting out of control, especially with stuff they had coming down the pipe with guys like Jeffrey Simmons going to be in line for new deals. And so they move on from him, draft Traylon Burks. But the likelihood that Burks is going to be as good as A.J. Brown is unlikely. And then in the third round, they end up drafting Malik Willis, which, you know, in an already kind of a, you know, uneasy situation for Ryan Tannehill in Tennessee with how the game against Cincinnati, the playoff game against Cincinnati went. It just kind of has kind of created this stir around the quarterback, which is really not what they need. Remember, this was the number one seed coming out of the AFC last year, and it just seems like there's too many things kind of heading in the wrong direction.
Yeah, it sure does, Tim. Look, I think Ryan Tannehill's fighting a lot of different battles here, okay? Now, obviously, he's fighting the battle of what he said and how people are interpreting it and making it seem like he's a selfish individual who doesn't want to look out for the next generation and that it's all about him and he should be mentoring this guy. And then there's people going, well, he doesn't need to mentor anybody. Well, look, I think the fact of the matter is this. He probably didn't need to say anything at all. I'm sure he will offer Malik Willis tips here and there, but look, he said that what's a fact. It's not his job to mentor Malik Willis. There's no question about that. It's his job to be a professional, lead this football team, set a great example, which are all things Malik Willis can benefit from. And if they wind up being great friends, great. If Ryan winds up telling him, look, these are the things that when I came here in the first year and I sat behind Marcus Mariota and then they put me in there and I took off and led the league in completion percentage above expectation, if he winds up copying some of the things that Ryan Tannehill did then, great. That's what he should do. That's what his job is. But look, Ryan, you know, he fights this narrative that everything that he has done in Tennessee is strictly because of Derrick Henry. As if Derrick Henry was back there throwing the football for him every play, if you let some people tell it. He had some good years. Last year, he struggled. He struggled. The offensive line wasn't very good in pass protection. His wide receivers were in and out of the lineup and weren't there for him all the time. And Derrick Henry missed a large portion of the season. So I think because of that, Ryan doesn't get any benefit of the doubt. He didn't need to say what he said, but I understand what he said. Right now, though, they need to just really kind of get things back in-house and get this team moving in the right direction because they have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, Lewis, the sense I get is a competitive Ryan Tannehill is better than perhaps a complacent one, right? Ryan Tannehill showing some edge and having that competitive spirit that he had when he was trying to win that job after, I think, a very humbling experience in Miami. And if you remember, there was a lot of chatter early on in training camp when Marcus was the starter, and a lot of people did not want to see Marcus lose his job because he was such a well-liked player. And Tannehill went in there and by week three was able to win the job over because he had that edge. So while I don't think that John Robinson is sitting there in the front office going, what can I do to light a fire under Ryan Tannehill's butt? I think those three interceptions in the playoff game against the Bengals was enough, and Ryan alluded to that. That obviously is something that sits on him. But I don't think this hurts. Competition breeds success, and bringing in a player like Malik Willis, who we know has the ability to lead and really get a lot of people around him excited to play, I think, if anything, this is we're going to get a good Ryan Tannehill out of this. I don't sense any drama down in Tennessee.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we all kind of understood what Tannehill was trying to say. I think to Lewis's point, coming out and saying it in this day and age is why there's a lot of chatter around it. Either way, coming up, it's all about the G-men. After the Giants declined to pick up the fifth-year option for Daniel Jones, hear which quarterback Todd McShay thinks the Giants will draft next year. Does Brian Daboll still have confidence in his quarterback? That's next. NFL Live is brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill.
First, I want to welcome everybody to NFL Live with Kayvon Thibodeau.
I heard there was a dance potentially in your future when your name gets called.
The New York football giant select, Kayvon Thibodeau.
Oh, I know what I'm doing. It's a plan. I believe in them, and it's this a go time. Daniel Jones wears 8.
Listen, I had to call the big homie, and I knew he was going to get me right with the drip. We're going to drop the coat. And we're going to walk off.
Okay. Now we're taking over the world. The party getting
started. Oh, big week last week in New York because the Giants spent 2 top 10 picks to help solidify their offensive and defensive lines, the additions of Kayvon Thibodeau and Evan Neal. We love these guys. But the draft focus now turns to 2023, where Todd McShay has New York targeting a quarterback in his way too early mock draft. So, Todd, why did you place Kentucky's Will Levis to the Giants at number 8?
Well, you got to look at the situation. The Giants didn't pick up the fifth-year option on Daniel Jones for 2 reasons, basically. 49 turnovers in 37 games and a multitude of injuries that have cost him time on the field, including the neck injury that was a season ender last year. So I went with Will Levis. I've tried to find a quarterback that had some sort of Josh Allen traits, if you will. Levis is 6'3", 235 pounds, big physical runner with a rifle for an arm. He can drive the ball down the field. Now, he sprays some balls a little bit like Josh Allen did in college at Wyoming, but there's a lot to work with there in that system. I think you could say the same thing with Anthony Richardson from Florida, Tyler Van Dyke from Miami. These are guys that are big, mobile, with strong arms. So it won't surprise me at all if we get to next year's draft and the Giants are trying to package picks to move up to go get one of the top 2 quarterbacks we talked about, Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, or if they wind up taking one in the top 10, 12 picks where they ultimately will select.
Giants fans, if you end up with Levis, something you should know about him, fun fact, he eats bananas with the peel on. Like, he eats the whole peel for nutritional value. That's how committed he is.
Gross.
I know, it's nasty. I tried it, believe me. A big reason the Giants could be in the market for a quarterback in the next year's draft is due to Daniel Jones' struggles on the field. Look at this. Through his first three seasons, Jones tied for the third most turnovers in the NFL and has the most fumbles lost. Even worse, the fact that he's played in at least seven fewer games than any of the other players to rank in the bottom three over that span. Smaller sample size. Despite that, Giants' new head coach Brian Daboll spoke on WFAN radio about how he doesn't want Jones to be scared to pull the trigger.
These first 3.5 weeks that I've been around him, I've been impressed with his work ethic, his leadership, even when he's with the guys. We just had a little football school right now. Does a good job in the huddle. I want him to be himself as well, too. Mm-hmm. And I want him to, not be afraid of consequences and pull the trigger and attack and have a positive mindset and continue to grow and learn. And I want him to have some ownership as to what he feels comfortable with as well.
I will say, all the way back to his coaching days in college, Daboll has been able to ignite a little bit of that in his quarterbacks and give him some confidence. It's part of his coaching genius. But, Diana, what do the Giants think about Jones heading into the season?
Yeah, I can tell you the Giants organization will go bananas themselves if Brian Daboll can get the best out of Daniel Jones. And you just heard the way Daboll described Daniel, and it sounds a lot like the way Todd McShay talked about him coming out of Duke. Mm. All those great characteristics, and there's a lot of belief in this organization. I was just with them last week having lots of conversations about the quarterback spot. There is belief that Daboll can bring out the best. I had one person there tell me the best version of Daniel Jones we are going to see is this season because what Brian Daboll will be able to do and how he can connect with the quarterback.
Yeah, so Lewis, let's make this tangible. What kind of season do the Giants need to see from Jones to make him the quarterback heading into 2023? What does he need to do?
I think first and foremost, Laura, you saw the statistics. He can't give it to the other team. Mm. You can't turn the football over, whether it be in the pocket, outside the pocket when you're scrambling, or making bad decisions in those moments that we were talking about, like with Jalen Hurts. So to me, this can't look like the same offense that Buffalo ran last year. This cannot be a five-wide, empty backfield set type of offense where the quarterback is sitting back there making sure that he has the right protection on to keep himself protected and then reading the full field and distributing the football. I don't think he's ready for that. This is his third system. This is his third different system. He's trying to learn a whole new system. Tim talked about the fact that quarterbacks can't make huge leaps when they're trying to learn a system and they haven't even mastered one. So I think for him, just start with not turning the football over and we'll go from there. Anything we can get from there, I think is moving in the positive direction. I just don't see this ending very well.
Yeah, Lou, I would agree with you. This idea that all of a sudden – Brian Daboll is there and we're going to see this, reaction, or this response out of Daniel Jones, like he's going to be Josh Allen. I just don't think it's realistic. That's not the player they drafted. Like, the turnovers were a problem at Duke. And I think in some ways they got excused away because of, how people evaluated the talent that he was playing with. But the reality is he turned the football over. He missed open guys, and I think in many ways he was probably overdrafted. And so when you look at that and think that there's going to be this response, it's why, building the offense around him the way they built it around Josh Allen in Buffalo, that won't work because he's not the same caliber of player.
Tim, I'm just curious, if you're somebody who is a little bit gun-shy in the pocket and some of these things we think about Daniel Jones, is that something that can sort of be fixed on the fly?
Listen, I would say this, and he's had plenty of criticism. I do not believe that he is, afraid to play from inside the pocket or stand in there. I think the pressure is now knowing his future in New York is in jeopardy.
Makes sense. All right, we got time for one more thing before we go, even though we could do this all day. For this, we head to TikTok, one of Lewis's favorite social media platforms. One of the current trends is Justin Bieber asking people to tell him something honest. Tom Brady understood the assignment. Raiders fans, look away.
Tough cruel game against the Raiders.
Might have been a fumble.
Oh, no. Timmy admitted it. What do we got here? It might have been a fumble.
Is anyone surprised?
Yeah, no, I mean, we're not, right? But Lewis, you think it was smart to put that out there? It's been a while.
Why are we not leading the show with this?
This is the Tom Brady we are going to see until he actually hangs it up for real,
yeah,
and doesn't come back. The guy is just messing with everyone, and as far as TikTok is concerned, you can talk to my kids about it. Lewis knows nothing about it. Zero.
Diana!
And I refuse to know anything about it.
Diana, tell me something honest. We got 10 seconds.
Oh my gosh, I don't know. Someone's watching my kid right now and he's screaming. That's what that noise has been all show, and I'm really sorry.